Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach, Gus Bradley, where we're going to take a look back, look ahead, a little bit around the National Football League, and of course we got to look at our college teams.
Oh yeah, we got a big one this week. North yeah. Dakota State and Iowa.
Yeah, that's the ESPN2 game, by the yeah. way.
Who's Virginia have?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. They probably don't have a very good chance. they started out 0-2, by the way. A tough road trip to Oregon last week for the Cavaliers.
Well,
but anyway. Let's get on to the Green Bay Packers. You know, I think the thing that really was impressed upon me the most, and I talked with you a little bit about it after the game, was, you know, after every game, I come to the end of the locker room, I talk to you for radio. Then after that, I go into the locker room, talk to different players. And all the time that you and Dave have been here, I don't think I've ever seen a locker room in the early stages of the season that was disappointed, frustrated, mad, angry, whatever you want to call it, because your team truly believed that they were going to win. And I think that's a good sign.
It is a good sign. You know, they say the last thing's the attitude. You know, and the attitude is that part where you walk onto that field prior to every game, and the mentality that you have is there is no doubt that you're going to be successful that day. And it's got to be real now, Logs. People talk about it. It's like expecting to win and knowing you're going to win, that type of mentality. There's a difference. So, yeah, they did. You know, and after the game, you could sure feel it in the locker room. You could sure feel it in the building. And, you know, like we missed an opportunity.
The one guy that I talked to first was Allen Robinson. And I don't know if I was going to be able to get a whole lot of words out of him. I mean, he said he would talk. But, you know, down the stretch there, you know, he had a couple of opportunities. I mean, they were tough opportunities now. I mean, one of them was a jump ball, and then he had another one in the fourth one to make a little bit better block. But you could just feel the disappointment in him. And I love seeing that because, to me, that says high-level competitor.
You're exactly right. High-level competitor. And, you know, after every game, we all do that. We all go back and say, what could I have done better? What could I have done different? And, you know, that's where it hurts so much because you feel like, you know, you're taking ownership, you're taking responsibility. But, you know, you can't beat yourself up either. I mean, he's made a lot of great plays for us, just like a number of players were going through that same experience. So, and coaches as well. So, you know what, that's why it's a great team. That's why I tell people this locker room is phenomenal. They care deeply. They're into football. It's very, very important to them. And this organization is very important to them.
You guys faced arguably the best quarterback in the National Football League in Aaron Rodgers. And he had his moments. You know, you held him to 199 yards passing, but he still made plays like Aaron Rodgers makes.
He did. And, you know, give him credit. We knew the type of quarterback he was and what he could, you know, some of the difficulties he presented. And you try to minimize those. You try to take away his strengths and force him into his weaknesses. And Aaron Rodgers doesn't have many weaknesses. But, you know, they did just enough. They made more plays than we did, and it showed up on the scoreboard.
The other thing that impressed me besides, you know, kind of the feel in the locker room after the game, early in that ball game, you have an interception. Blake throws one just a little bit behind Marquise. You know, catchable. Marquise, you know, could have had an opportunity at that. Ends up in the Packers' hands. They score off of it. But, you know, you never had that feel from your football team that, oh no, here we go. It was just a, hey, let's go.
Yeah, it really was. On the sideline, you could feel it. Every team is different, Logs, every team. Last year's team is not this year's team. It's a different mentality. There's some different players on board. You know, it's just it's a different feel. And it's a highly competitive team that has gone through the rigors of training camp, a highly competitive session, and then they're getting ready to play in the regular season. And it was our first opportunity. So, you know, I marvel at it. I marvel at their mental attitude, their approach. And we talk about quickly recover, and they exhibited that on Sunday.
That fourth and one play, I don't know how many times that I was asked by people this week about, what did you think of the fourth and one play? And obviously a big question that was asked of you this week, one that was asked of Greg Olsen, your offensive coordinator, and he said, I guess today he said that, you know, I'd like to have that one back again. But my thought on that is when you have a critical play and you put the ball in your best player's hands or on the shoulders of your best players, as you guys did there with Blake, Allen Hurns, and Allen Robinson, there's nothing wrong with that to me.
Well, no, I mean, you look back at it and everybody analyzes it. And you get a chance to do that on Monday. And then you got to move on from it. But, you know, as a run-pass option, we catch it, we get the block, we execute it, we get out of bounds. You know, we're in a great situation. It didn't work out that way. But it didn't come down to that one play. There are other plays in the game that could have been made, could have been called. For whatever reason, it didn't work out and put us in that position. So, you know, it's easy to focus on one play and what you would do differently. But as coaches on Monday, we go through the whole game and look at what we could have done differently on every play, and as well as do the players.
Then fans, they don't look at the second, the third down before that, or the second down before that, or the first down before that. I mean, there's opportunities even going away from that series.
Yeah, and throughout the game, you know, and it was pretty similar in the second half, right? They had two field goals. We had two field goals. So if the defense gets a stop and holds them to, you know, no point attempt on a series, you know, then we're in great shape. You know, we kick a field goal and we're off and running. But, you know, there's just so many plays in the game that you look back, and that's every week you do that.
This was Todd Walsh's first game as a defensive coordinator. A couple things about him. How was he like before the game? Getting ready to be, you know, a first-time play caller on game day, a real game day in the NFL, and how did he do?
I thought he did a great job. You know, and the great job is during the week, first of all. When you have your players prepared, you have a game plan, you go into it, and you execute it. And you see the execution of it. Our objective was not to let him scramble and get a lot of explosive plays off extended plays. And we confined him pretty well. I think they had an explosive play off one extended play. But other than that, pretty good job. So you're seeing those things emphasized during the week, and then it gets into the game and it's executed. Those are all really good signs. And the way he called the game, too, it was, you know, did a great job. Changed it up on some third down situations. Gave some different looks, brought some pressure, played some coverage, you know, so it was very well.
It's interesting to me that leading up to that game, and you even mentioned it right there about how you rushed Aaron Rodgers and how the explosive plays come when he's out of the pocket. I think this is a great opportunity to talk about the role of metrics or analytics or statistics. And how do you guys gain that information when you're formulating a game plan for a guy like Aaron Rodgers? Where do you get that information from that says, okay, out of 80 explosive plays, you know, 75% of them were when he got out of the pocket to extend the play?
Sure, and it is a combination. You bring up all their explosive plays from last year, the year before when they had Jordy, and you take a look at all of them. Our analytics department comes out and gives you the data and might bring some stats to attention that you look up and you watch on film to find the truth to it. And, you know, but you use all avenues. And that was the big thing that popped up was the number of explosive plays out of the pocket on extended plays.
I think a lot of people don't realize that when you're preparing for a team, it's just not 1 week. You know, you guys started preparing for the Green Bay Packers going back to when?
Yeah, well, you take a look at all the teams, yeah, you know, in the off season, and you might take a team, you know, every couple of days and look at them and begin the studying process. A lot of things can change with your personnel, so it's like preliminary things. You know, you make some notes off, you know, kind of the direction you want to go, and, you know, you formalize it and put it all together, you know, the week of the game. But, yeah, you do extensive studying on all the teams that you're going to play.
Defensively for you guys, you know, that was an area that I just couldn't wait to watch because in the preseason, your guys did not have a lot of snaps together. Impressions of them overall, individually, about how they performed as a group?
Well, I thought, you know, there's always going to be plays that you look back and you say, well, we could have had a little bit tighter coverage here, or, you know, our zones were a little bit skewed. But overall, I thought it was pretty tight coverage. You know, if you take an overall picture of it for some guys that are playing, you know, a Gibson and a Ramsey playing in their first games here in Jacksonville. I thought they did a good job, real good job. I think underneath coverage, we did a pretty good job. Like you said, you know, it's not all just, you know, 199 yards passing. It's just when you look at it on film and you look at the spacing and how aggressive we were. So I was pleased with the back end. Like to see more plays made, like to see some balls, you know, the opportunities to get some interceptions. Again, they do a good job taking care of the ball. We knew that we'd have to get
Aaron
a tip.
Rodgers does a great job.
Right. We'd have to get a tip or an overthrow or, you know, plays like that because he's pretty accurate. But overall, the back end, as far as tight coverage, you know, a good grade.
That was a number that I brought up last week with you. The lowest interception percentage in the National Football League history, which is a pretty impressive stat. Now, looking at your offensive line, that was another. You know, my questions going into that game, okay, how's your defense going to perform without having a lot of snaps together? The other side of the ball was, okay, you got an offensive line. Kelvin Beachum has had 26 snaps at left tackle, and that was in the third preseason game, and he was with Luke Jokel, but those guys hadn't played a lot of snaps together. I thought they did pretty well for the most part there on the left side.
Yeah, they did. You know, I think like the defense, we just talked about them, where I think each week we should get better. The more they're playing with each other, the more they understand how the scheme's coming together, what we're asking of them in game situations, we should see improvement there. And I think it's no different on the left side of the ball, too. I think those guys having a chance to be together, they've had minimal snaps, but for the first game, did a good job. And I think that's only going to improve the more reps they get.
I thought Luke Jokel had, I think, about three pancakes in the game, the run game.
He's playing more physical. You know, I think this has been a good move for him. I think it's a situation where he's learning it on the run a little bit. But for the first game and going in there and playing against a good defense and a good front, did a good job.
Yeah, you could see that Kelvin Beachum kind of, as the game wore on, you could see that, I don't want to say he faded away, but you could see that the quickness, the movement, a little slower than it was early in the game, but that's to be expected. I mean, here's a guy coming
right
back from an ACL.
We didn't know exactly how much we would get. We anticipated the whole game, but give him credit. I mean, for to come back and play the whole game off of, you know, how many snaps he had in preseason and in a hot environment like he did. And, again, he's going to be sore, right, the next day. But he's done a great job this week coming back from it and should be ready to go.
Brandon Linder, also his first real NFL game at center. There was one play in particular that really stood out in my mind, and maybe it does yours as well. It was, I believe, a fourth down play, and they brought, like, double A-gap blitzers where they crossed, and T.J. Yeldon and him kind of went to the same guy. And Linder blocks the guy and then feels that T.J. is on his back and realizes that the other guy is not going to get blocked. And I don't know who was right or who was wrong blocking initially, but Linder literally picks his guy up and carries him over so that he can get a piece of the other guy.
Right, yeah, I know exactly the play you're talking about. He's playing with a great deal of confidence right now. We saw it in preseason and in training camp, the more he became familiar with the position. But he has taken over that position. He has got great ownership, you know, gets the offensive line together, understands the protections. He's in with the quarterback meetings, and that's so important for him and Blake to be on the same page. But it allows him to play aggressively, allows him to play physical, and you're seeing that on tape.
I know that you guys got a little bit of a surprise the night before the game. Chris Ivory was unavailable to play. A lot of questions that I had this week. You know, what happened to Chris Ivory? He issued a statement this week. A lot of people were thinking bad stuff. But it's not bad stuff. He's fine. He had a medical condition that he'd like to keep private. That's all there is to it. It was nothing crazy.
No, it wasn't. But, you know, every player is different, and you just respect their privacy. You know, and with Chris, that was a situation we talked about. And you know, he cares about this team. I think, you know, seeing him today, he said, Gus, I just want to get back, get ready to go, and help this team the way I can. So, you know, he's in great spirits now. It's great to see him again.
All right, well, let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back more with the head coach, and we'll talk a little San Diego Chargers right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show, where this segment is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. Before we jump into the San Diego Chargers, Gus, last week, what a great environment at Everbank. It was hot, but, man, the fans showed up. It was loud. They were into it. Great place to be.
unbelievable environment. And, you know, to feel the energy from the stadium, you know, down on the field with our players, you know how it is, Logs, is even louder down there because it all, you know, all the noise is confined there. So, yeah, the players really felt it, appreciated it. I mean, you can't say enough about the fan base and how active they were in that game and how much they helped.
Heading to San Diego, West Coast trip, there's always some type of magic formula that coaches try to figure out for a West Coast trip. And you're doing exactly what you've done for ever since you've been here, leaving on a Friday.
Yeah, and you know what? When you travel across a couple time zones, that's a general rule of thought. You get people involved. You know, sleep studies, and you talk to sleep specialists, and you know, what can you do for your players to best get them acclimated to going across a couple time zones? But, you know, our players have responded, you know, to the information we've given them, you know, how we're going to go about this week, when we're going to travel. So, you know, we got to be ready to play.
Do you guys do anything special upon arrival? I remember under Tom Coughlin, when we would travel like on a Friday, a lot of times we would go there, work out to get some blood flowing, or even on Saturday when we did our walkthrough, it would be just a little bit more than usual just to kind of work out some of those kinks on Saturday. I don't know if it worked
right
or not, but.
No, you know, as far as the schedule change, you know, you talked about we leave the same time, but our schedule as far as for the players did change last year. You know, on Fridays now it's more of a walkthrough format, and we bring performance stations in. The players will do yoga, they'll do massages, they'll get a chance to work with our trainers, with Milo and the strength staff. So we do about 2 hours of activity with them just to bring their body back. And we felt like it was great benefit. And then actually on Saturday we go out there and we do about 15 minutes of high-speed accelerations and to bring their legs back and kind of get their muscles firing again. So we'll do the performance stations tomorrow, and then when we land in San Diego, we'll finish up with a couple other performance stations just, again, to get their body going, and then we'll have a chance to run on Saturday in San Diego.
You doing yoga?
No.
Have you ever done yoga?
No. Oh, you know what? I have. Yeah. I have done it, yes.
And?
I know it's really good. I think it was hot yoga.
I've done
yoga.
It a couple times.
Have you?
Yeah. It was different.
Yeah, it was hot yoga, so it you know, the chance to go through all the – you know, I think it's something that you have to do over and over again to get pretty good at it. So
I don't think I'd want to do hot yoga. I sweat too much. Anyway, the health of the football team, you're doing all this to stay healthy and to get your team ready to play a game, the injury report. I didn't see today's injury report, so I'll refer to yesterday's. Prince Amukamara did not practice yesterday with a hamstring. Any change in his status today?
Well, he's coming along. You know, I know that he felt better today than he did yesterday. You know, that could be a day-to-day deal, you know, see how he responds. You know, we'll have to make a decision tomorrow or Saturday, you know, based on the information we get from the training room. So, you know, he's missed a couple days, so we'll see where he's at.
He played really well Sunday.
He did. You know what? And it's, you know, his first time in the system too. And I thought there were some things that really showed up. You know, he's got a good understanding. He's a pro. He's played a lot of football. Coming into our system, he should be able to pick it up quickly. And it was good to see that it transferred on the field.
The other guy on the injury report, Jeremy Parnell. Growing, I believe it was. How's he doing?
Yeah, he had some tightness. But, you know, again, he's another one that we'll take a look at. You know, see how he comes in tomorrow morning. We get a pretty good idea in the morning how they're going to be for that day. But when you get to Friday, it's more about how are they going to be for the game.
Have you reminisced going back to Blake Bortles' first career start in San Diego a little bit?
Yeah, you know what? I have a tendency not to look back too much, you know, and go back. And, you know, you learn from your past mistakes or some things you do differently. But really it's, you know, it's a new team. And, you know, what we're going into, and they have a new team. They have some new players and playing different positions, so our focus has really been on that.
I know this probably doesn't concern you much because, you know, most football coaches like, look, if we're playing ball, we're playing ball. It doesn't matter if we're doing it in somebody's backyard or anything else. But the San Diego Chargers, I'm sure you've heard, you know, with the ballot initiative that's going on with possible relocation, the environment, you know, it's their first home game. It could be different.
Oh, it will be different. You know, anytime you go to a NFL stadium where it's the opening day atmosphere, we know it's going to be loud. It's going to be, you know, a festive, spirited atmosphere. And, you know, really for us, that's just in-game situations as far as dealing with the crowd noise and dealing with the noise of each play. And so we're prepared for that, and we prepared for it all during the week. So, you know, let's go play.
We talked earlier about some familiar faces, Ken Wisenhunt. Has Dave Caldwell gotten in your ear a little bit about his high school teammate, Tom Telesco?
I know that we're close in high school. So
For those that don't know, Tom Telesco, and I had to write this down so I didn't screw it up, but Tom Telesco and Dave Caldwell both attended St. Francis High School in, I hope I say this right, Athol Springs, New York. So I think I got that right.
No, they've been just like coaches. You know, you get to know a lot of the head coaches, and Dave knows a lot of the GMs. And then with Tom, you know, going to school with him, obviously he has a different style of relationship with him than some of the other guys just because of the closeness.
All right, well, let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we'll talk more of the San Diego Chargers with the head coach, Gus Bradley, right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show alongside Jeff Logman as the head coach. And this week doesn't get any easier. Aaron Rodgers last week, Phillip Rivers, I wrote some numbers down. 41,690 yards passing, that's 14th all-time in NFL history. 282 touchdowns, that's 11th all-time. And if you look at his numbers last year, almost 5,000 yards passing, 29 touchdowns. He's not slowing down.
No, not at all. And you watched the tape from this past weekend, and he was on fire in the first half. So he's a very good quarterback, and he has put up a lot of yards versus a lot of teams. And, so we've got to take a look at some things. You get a chance, again, some of those off-season studies, you know, some of the areas that you want to improve on, and specifically against San Diego, and you study the tape But you understand his strengths. And, again, you go in there and try to take away his strengths.
His strengths, to me, is how much of a competitor he is. I remember watching the film from last year, Jared Odrich sacked him and kind of buried him into the turf a little bit. And Phillip was on the ground trying to push him off and jawing at him. You know, and that's him. He's competitive. He jaws. He's going to get in somebody's face. That's how he is.
He is. You know, you love that about him. You love his competitive spirit. He is. He's got a passion, and it's vocal. And he has no problem standing up to anybody.
Has he ever said anything to you on the sideline?
We'll keep it to this, you know. But you know what? You do. He's just got an unbelievable competitive spirit, and his team really relies on that.
He lost Keenan Allen watching the Kansas City tape. Keenan Allen, I think it was about a minute to go in the half, is running a route where he's in the slot and he just runs up the field, non-contact, plants his foot to break out to the left, and his right knee wobbles a little bit, tears an ACL. He had six catches up to that point in the ball game. Highly effective player, one of the better wide receivers in the league. That's a big loss for them.
You know, it is. It's sad to see any player go down with that type of injury. And he's a big part of their offense. And you can see there is a great relationship between the two on the field. I imagine Phillip Rivers feels, you know, sad about the whole deal as well. Here's one of his teammates that went down and appreciates his talent level. But also knowing Phillip Rivers is that he's going to say, but we move on. And some guys will step up, and we'll continue to move forward.
Speaking about guys stepping up, Antonio Gates in his 14th year, his numbers are just incredible. Third all-time amongst tight ends with 847 receptions, over 10,000 yards receiving, 104 touchdowns. That's seventh among all players in the NFL's history. Great player.
He is. And, you know, it more of a situational type player. You'll see him out of the game for a series or two or a couple plays, and then he'll pop up and he'll be in the game. And he does such a good job with his body and presenting matchup issues. It's not so much speed, it's his wisdom.
He kind of plays like a power forward in basketball, doesn't he?
Yeah, you know, and he just knows, you know, the area of the fields. And I think with Phillip, too, you can see him. Some of the passes might look behind Gates a little bit, but it's to allow him to catch it and redirect. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's got such good accuracy. He understands him so well, especially in the red zone.
They got great chemistry.
Great chemistry.
I mean, I think, 77 touchdowns that those two have together, that shows a lot of time together. Chemistry, obviously, is a huge factor.
It is. You know, and they see the coverages the same way. So if they have route combinations they want to run or, you know, break an angle of a route at a certain depth because of the coverage they're seeing, they both see it the same way.
One of the guys that I think has taken a step up from the Chargers of last year, they drafted Melvin Gordon last year high out of the University of Wisconsin. He didn't even have a rushing touchdown last year. First week against Kansas City, he has two of them. He's elusive. He's got power. He's got a little bit of everything, it looks like.
He does. And he's running, like you said, he's always had really good speed. But he's running more physical. He'll run in between the box, in the box. That's where the fullback comes in. It's like it's very similar to him to his Wisconsin offense, you know, where he can get back there, line up deep in the backfield, hit it downhill, have the ability to make people miss, short area quickness, and very elusive. So it just feels like he's in his comfort level.
And then the other running back, Danny Woodhead, the numbers from the Kansas City game, 21 touches, 120 yards, all-around back, can run it, can receive, can do everything.
Well, now, you know, he's always been a guy that could run the ball, but looks like they're more committed to him running the ball. And, you know, his draws, screens, out of the backfield, you know, a wide variety of skill set that you have to be ready for. So, you know, it's not just one-dimensional now. It's not just, hey, let's give him a draw occasionally and then get him out of the backfield. You know, they're trying to establish a run game with him as well.
Gordon was an eye running back at Wisconsin, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And that's what I was kind of wondering, because, you know, when they drafted him, they weren't really using him in that fashion. Well, this year they draft a fullback we'd mentioned earlier, Derek Watt, in the sixth round, who happens to be J.J. Watt's brother. So now they have a fullback, and I'm sure that Melvin Gordon and Watt will be on the field together a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, Melvin can play in one back, too. He does a really good job there. But when they get that fullback in the game, you can just tell on film, you know, we have one game of it, but you can just tell there's a comfort level back there. It's like he's back in his area of where he feels confident what he needs to do, and he's got great vision, so it gives him a little bit more chance to use that vision.
All right, well, let's take a break. We come back, we'll talk San Diego Chargers defense with the head coach Gus Bradley right here on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach and the Chargers defense. Not a ton of changes. They've got the same defensive coordinator, John Pagano. It's a 3-4 defense once again for your offense to face. But they don't have Eric Weddle anymore. It looks very different when he's not back there.
Right. I think the scheme is very similar, but just the freedom they gave him. You know, he did such a good job disguising and knew where he needed to be by the time the ball was snapped. So very active, and, you know, without him, very good players still back there. Their secondary does a really good job, but just a different, you know, type of movement from the back end.
Speaking of Eric Weddle, you'll see him week three. He's now with the Baltimore Ravens. To replace him, the San Diego Chargers signed, formerly of, what was he, with the Indianapolis Colts last year?
Yeah.
Dwight Lowry, who was here for a period of time.
Yeah, and Dwight's got really good range, you know, and I think he was with Atlanta, and you know, so he's got really good range, can patrol the back end, comes up, can play in the box. So it's got some versatility for him.
I got this new term that I stole from Alan Hearns during the preseason. He was talking to our sideline guy, Rick Ballew, and he was talking about the corners of, I believe it was the Cincinnati Bengals, and he referred to them as twitchy, which twitchy means the smaller guys, that the short area quickness, and – you know, that's not something he's accustomed to seeing every day in practice, because your corners are big, long. And this week you've got those twitchy type of corners with the San Diego Chargers defense. And is it Jason Verrett that's the one that is – he had an interception last week against Kansas City. And I know Todd Walsh referred to him as an elite player this week.
Yeah, you know what? Verrett is very good, very talented. He's a guy that will travel with receivers. So you'll see him play on the right side. You'll see him play on the left side. He's got really good flexibility, very aggressive player, even though maybe a little shorter than some of the guys that, you know, Hearnsy and A-Rob have been facing in practice, plays big, you know, but he's got good twitch.
Who do you think is the best player that the Chargers have on defense? Is it up front a Corey Legit? Is it a Melvin Ingram as an outside backer? Not counting Jason Verrett.
Right. Well, I think you look at it differently. You know, if you ask the offensive line who's the best player, they're going to talk about the defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. If you ask the receivers, they're going to talk about the DBs. So you look at it by more position group, the guys that stand out for them. And it's the guys that you named to compare which one's better. They play different positions. And you look at the impact they can have on an offense by the style they play and some of the calls that are being made, you know, to utilize their skill set.
There's one guy in particular that I really enjoyed prior to last year's game because number 52 kept flashing. University of Miami product Denzel Perryman. Not a big guy, 5'10", 5'11", 240 pounds, and he's still playing a lot. And all of a sudden now there's a 57 showing up. And I'm going, okay, who's 57? You know, you put your board together and you look, and it's a rookie. Jatavis Brown from Akron, and he's getting a lot of snaps as a rookie.
Yeah, Jatavis is very quick. You know, more like a nickel will linebacker. Can come in, plays with a lot of speed, very explosive. A little bit maybe undersized first and second down, although they'll probably try to utilize him in those situations. But that speed, you know, really shows up on tape. And Perryman, we know about him. You know, you go through him in the draft, and you saw him last year play. Very explosive, compact, explosive, really understands the game well. Very, very good instincts.
Yeah, it's kind of easy to confuse those two guys when you're watching a film because they're not big, tall guys. You know, you can tell who Manti Te'o is, but then all of a sudden you got 52 and 57. I mean, these guys are quick, they're powerful, and they're good players.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Perryman is just his explosiveness. When he hits you, he hits you. And, you know, he's got that type of a range, too, as a linebacker.
All right, well, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll open up for some phone calls. You can call in, folks, 904-355-6351 or 1-800-355-NFL1, either one. Again, 355-6351 to call in to talk to the head coach, Gus Bradley, right here on the Gus Bradley Show. And we will talk to him and you right after this, right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Logan alongside the head coach. Just one more topic before we go take a few phone calls. Telvin Smith, I thought, played a very good football game. And from what I understand, he made some comments after the game to the football team.
Yeah, you know, we've got very passionate players. So, you know, it was a tough game. And to be in the locker room and you know, share his feelings of, you know, where we need to go and, you know, how he felt. And, you know, he's just, you know, he has a spirit that the whole team appreciates. And, you know, it's a part of ownership. You know, you want this team to feel so strongly about it that they have ownership in the team. And, you know, so he's great. What a great teammate and a great guy to coach.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. Let's bring up John on the south side first. Good evening, John.
Yes. Hello?
Yeah, we got you, John. Go ahead.
Hi, John.
Okay, so my question for you, Coach Bradley, is how do you decide who you play, like, for this week's game? Alu-Alu, I saw he was inactive last week. You know, he's a solid pro. You know what he is. And you have two young guys like Fowler and Dockwe. Do you play the best of 53 today, or do you look for more of a long-term approach, knowing we need these young guys to be the guys at some point, so you're willing to let Alu-Alu sit, hoping the young guys develop? What's your thought on that?
Sure. That's a great question. I think every game is different. The guys that are inactive, we make that decision as we go through the week with injuries. They play different positions. You know, when you're going against a team that is maybe playing with three wides and they're going to spread you out and it's really on the pass rush, you know, that's where Tyson, you know, we've got Tyson and Jared Odrick and Avery Jones. And so you're looking for that flexibility to play multiple positions. But you generally can only have so many guys up. You know, you got to take care of special teams. So something has to give. But if it's a team that is more of a ground and
power
pound,
run
and,
football.
Yeah, power
team.
Run football. And then you got to look at different avenues. And that's, you know, where Tyson's strength. Not that he can't pass rush. He does a solid job of that. But his strength is, you know, really playing the run.
Yeah, I made a comment before the game because I saw that Sheldon Day was up and Tyson was down. I said, who do you want chasing Aaron Rodgers? Do you want Sheldon Day chasing Aaron Rodgers, or do you want Tyson Alu-Alu? No offense to Tyson, but Sheldon moves a little bit quicker. He's got a little bit more range to him.
Yeah, you know what? It's just different roles, you know, too. I think, you know, when you look as a green rusher, you know, that's when in third down, who's going to be your inside rushers, you know, as far as the rotation and how you're going to work it. You know, part of that is, you know, a big part of the decision as well.
All right, let's go talk to Kyle in Arlington this evening. Good evening, Kyle.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Kyle.
Yes, I'm right here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey. Oh, I just wanted to just make a statement that there was a little bit of question about our special teams earlier on, but I was very impressed the way special teams played this past Sunday. And overall, I think we showed, yes, we have a solid team that can play with anybody. A loss is a loss, but I was very, very impressed.
Well, you know, I appreciate that, Kyle. We, you know, we look at it as, you know, now that it's over, it's the message is we see what we're capable of, but we mean business, you know, and you know, we're coming out to practice and we got to increase in areas that we're weak in the game, and you know, we want more. And I thought you're right, the special teams did a nice job. We talked about, you know, 100% on scoring opportunities, you know, set up a score, you know, with our kickoff return, we gained some extra yards there, put them in backed up situations. So as far as time of possession, field position, scoring on all opportunities, you're right, the special teams did do a nice job.
Well, and especially your kickers. Nortman was fantastic dropping those two balls down at the three. And Jason Myers making all of his kicks, everything. So that was really nice. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Let's bring up Brandon in Orange Park. Good evening, Brandon.
How's it going?
How you doing, Brandon?
I'm doing great. How are you, Coach?
Good, good.
I had a question. It's my perspective. Now, you may have stats that prove it otherwise, but it seems like to me from my couch that the Jaguars, I call it getting 2-for-1 a lot. And what I mean by that is a team will go down and score before the half, and then they'll come out with the ball in the second half and score again. And it seems like to me that it puts us way behind because they get two chances and we get one. I was just wondering, is that something you coach? Is there some kind of strategy you can use to stay out of those 2-for-1 situations? Is there a certain package or, you know, a term you guys use for that?
Sure.
That, you know, you can use to maybe keep us out of those situations in the future, and maybe just discuss, you know, what your thoughts are on that.
Right.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank you.
It's another great question. It's something that we discuss each and every week. We take a look at how we're playing offensively. We're looking at the team that we're playing, and we talk about, do we, you know, if we win the coin toss, what do? Do we defer? And let us get in that situation that we're in a two-minute situation and come out. It doesn't work that clean all the time. Sometimes you look at your offense and you say, you know what, we're better in the second half than in the first half, or you know what, we need to learn to start strong. Let's take the ball and get some points up and play with the lead. You know, so you look at all avenues. Ideally, it's not to let them, you know, get an opportunity to score in a two-minute and then come out and score again. You know, so we got to get better in those situations. But there is a lot of thought. There's a lot of analytics, believe it or not, based on how the team does themselves. How do they score in the second half versus the first half? But all those things were taken in consideration, and then they won the toss. You know,
I think it just gets so complicated now with all these with these numbers. You know, it's just gotten so complex.
Well, and sometimes you can overthink it too. You know, I think you got to take into account your team and what they do best, mm-hmm. And then you just go from there.
Sometimes you just got to use your gut.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back more with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside head coach. And Gus, you know, you always have said in the past, you got to stay true to yourself. You've changed on me. You have.
I'm sure I have.
Well, the reason I say that is, you know, when we used to do the show last year, you'd bring pizza in.
You know what? We can't have it because of this table. I told them. They asked me today, and I said I'd like to, but they won't let me bring it into the room.
Well, you lost a bunch of weight, and I figured that, you know.
No, no, no. It had nothing to do with that. It was more because you told me I can't put a water on the table, so I didn't think I could bring in a pizza.
Did you hear that? Pop. Pop, not soda.
Soda.
Pop.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Minnesota-North Dakota thing. Anyway, North Dakota State, last week I talked about how they were in the Trees Bowl, big win, against Eastern Washington.
Yeah, I think they've had, what, two overtime wins now, so.
Yeah, they won overtime Eastern Washington 50-44. And then big game this week against Iowa.
Yeah, you know what? And the athletic director at the University of Iowa and I played at North Dakota State at the same time. And the assistant athletic director at Iowa was the old athletic director at North Dakota State. So, you know, there's going to be some great ties there. I know that's why they got the game worked up to where they played it. So there'll be a lot of Fargo fans down in Iowa City.
Do you get a chance to watch them ever? I mean, they're going to be on, I guess, ESPN2, 11 a.m. Eastern time. So will you get a chance to watch?
Yeah, you know what? We generally don't. You know, I tried to watch some of the game they played on a Thursday night, I believe, a couple of weeks ago. So saw some of that. But, you know, you always follow the score. I mean, the players are always on, Washer and I and Scotty Hazleton. So, you know, they follow them here.
Now, so when you talk about North Dakota State, do you say we or do you say they?
We.
And, by the way, there's a guy on the Chargers, North Dakota State guy, Kyle Emanuel, outside backer starting for him.
You know what? They've done a really good job with that program. I mean, there's multiple players that are playing the league from that institution now. So they just keep playing and getting more players in.
Thank you, Gus.
Okay, thank you.
We'll talk to you next week right here, same time, same place, right here on the Gus Bradley Show.